Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to it. Day of days, y'all. We are here at the end of the week. We like to call it Fri-yay around here. We got a sound effect. Hit me some Fri-yay sound effect. Fri-yay! Indeed. Welcome to the end of the week. You guys made it to another weekend. We're going to get you all the way to go home time on a Fri-yay afternoon. And pushing the buttons so incredibly ably, JP on the board. Hey, man, how you doing?
Doing good this Fri-yay. How are you?
I see you're getting all into the lexicon at Right Side now. That's good. Yeah, we're good. We're good. Yeah, you got a weekend planned? Sports.
Sports and gym.
Yeah. All right.
Well, watch Alabama, and then when I'm not, I'll find something else to accompany my time.
Of course, you got your show tomorrow morning.
Yeah, of course, tomorrow morning.
Outstanding. All right, we got a great show laid on for you here this afternoon, though. Coming up at 3 o'clock today, U.S. Senator Katie Britt will be on the air with us. Senator Britt giving us the latest on some things coming out of the D.C. Madness, and then we'll talk with her at 3 p.m. And then at 3:30 p.m., you know, it's the regular Friday thing now, JP on sports. We're gonna hear the latest on where he thinks sports trends are going. We'll do the three and out and the two-minute warnings with JP on sports at 3:30. And then I got a triple dipper just filled up with stuff, so hit it, man.
The triple dipper. Three stories you've got to know.
That's right, the triple dipper. Three stories, three themes, if you will, that you got to know as we run today's show. All right, first out, I'm just calling it Senate! Exclamation point, because the Senate is key right now. We took a majority in the Senate, the U.S. Senate, and it's extremely important because that's how we get confirmations and everything else done. Senate leadership just had an election. There's been a little bit of controversy around that. We'll talk about it in detail. But overall, it is finally time to talk about the Senate from a different perspective. Namely, I don't have to say Majority Leader Chuck Schumer when I say anything right now. I mean, technically, he still is for the moment, but he's not going to be for long. So Senate, that's number one, triple dipper. Number two, how many times in the last 3.5 years have I talked about what I call the Green New Steel? Well, the Green New Steel has been arrested. I got a series of articles right now that will point to the fact that upon Trump's inauguration, we can expect the Green New Steel to come to a grinding halt. There may be bits and pieces that get tweaked, but for the most part, some of the wokeness and the Green New Steel with all our money going to projects that just make no sense, it's going to come to a stop, and I'm looking forward to it. Green New Steel arrested, number two on the triple dipper. And then number three, I didn't get to it yesterday, but by golly, I'm getting to it today. Stop the madness. And I've got some great sound clips to go from speakers like Pete Hegseth and Justine Bateman. I didn't know she was a conservative, but wow. So yeah, we'll talk about stopping the madness as number three on today's triple dipper. All right, let me jump over here to the Right Side Way monologue. And I got to ask you as I start this thing, have you ever been in one of those endless loops of things that just don't make any sense? The kind where you feel like you're sort of like in one of those bad dreams where you showed up late for class, but you forgot to wear pants and you didn't know there was a test and nobody gave you a straight answer. I hate those dreams. You know, you've all had those dreams. But as much as I hate those dreams, I hate it even more when ridiculous circumstances in real life are brought on by other people's ridiculous inability to cope or act or lead. And that's the reason why life's got to be hard. Look, that, my friends, is where we've been for the last 4 years. In an endless loop of jackassery. A truly endless perpetual loop of jackassery foisted on us by people who cannot cope or act or lead. And so our life became their plaything as they experimented with culture and politics and finances and endless loop of jackassery. It reminds me of a trip, by the way, that Charlene and I took when we were in our first few years of marriage. I mean, it felt like something out of a bad dream. Now, I've had some humbling flight arrangements in my time, but nothing beats the time that Charlene and I flew to Colorado. We were young, in our early 20s. We were the epitome of poor newlyweds. We were on a staff of a ministry called Young Life, and it was time for a staff conference. Well, we never got to go anywhere. So the chance to go to Colorado, to fly there no less, felt very grown up, I'll be honest. Kind of rich. So the National Young Life Office made our flight arrangements and they FedExed us the tickets. I got them, verified the itinerary. We made our plans to fly out of Atlanta. Awesome. I hate Atlanta, but that's where we went. So we were making the drive to Hartsfield International Airport in Atlanta, and Charlene asked me, what airline are we on? You know, I actually didn't even know. So she pulled out the folder where I had all the tickets and the trip info, and the next thing I know, she's looking at me going, Mark Air? What's Mark Air? And there's no seat numbers, Phil. What kind of jackleg flight do you have us on? Well, I didn't know. I just told her it'd be fine. I didn't make the arrangements. Young Life made them. But anyway, so the young neophyte travelers, we got to the airport and realized how vast Hartsfield is. Holy cow. And of course, Mark Air has the last possible baggage check-in location. So we're running late. So I asked the lady at the ticket desk. I said, ma'am, are they going to serve a meal on this flight? And she stared at me with this blank stare like a cow chewing cud. And she says, you've never flown Mark Air before, have you? And she handed us a coupon for fast food. And thus it began. So we started the epic trek, a half-mile walk to a 10-minute train ride to another half-mile walk to the last gate in the last terminal. And y'all, we were about exhausted the time we got to our gate. But then, as we approached it, Charlene and I noticed the line of people. Nobody was sitting down at the terminal gate. Oh, no, no. They were all standing, like 150 or more. And as we walked up to become the last people in line, I said, this is crazy. Why is everyone standing here? And a guy turned around in front of us in a defeated tone. He goes, oh, you've never flown Mark Air before. Apparently, it was like a first come, first serve. I mean, what? So by now, Charlene's glaring at me. I'm sure we're going to get on, honey. At which point, the guy next to me said, oh, you've never flown Mark Air before. It was like some strange mantra being chanted over and over by the depressed masses of Mark Air captives. And then the guy follows up by saying, yeah, I've flown Mark Air a dozen times. I've never sat by the folks that I was with. Well, to make it even more fun, the flight was oversold. How do you oversell? At which point, another lady turned around and said, oh, you've never flown Mark Air before. So apparently overselling was like a classic Mark Air move. Oh, man. This thing's a total nail-biter. But lo and behold, we did make it on. And we actually sat by each other. On the back row by the toilets. You know, the seat on the airplane you get stuck with because it's the only ones left. The seat on the very, very, very back row that's pressed up against the wall of the lavatory so you can't lean back at all. You know, the same seat that people have to come to and stand there right next to you in your personal space waiting for the door of the restroom. And every time they open the door, you get a big whiff of chemical blue water that only comes from an airplane toilet. That's it, man. Back row by the toilets. The ultimate in not first class. The most humble of all flight accommodations. The kind where you feel like the airline ought to pay you to sit there. But if you've ever been stuck in airport purgatory and they tell you you have one seat available, it's on the back row by the toilet, you know you jump on it like a spider monkey on a donut. So we made it. And we're together. And as the flight got underway, neither one of us having eaten anything because we couldn't risk getting out of the boarding line, I made the comment, don't worry, honey, I'll ask for some extra peanuts or something from the stewardess. And I kid you not, the other guy to our left on the back row by the toilets leaned over and says, oh, you've never flown Mark Air before. It was like the phrase of the day. He went on to tell us everything costs money. You got to pay the stewardess for peanuts, Cokes, coffee, water, all of it in cash, by the way. And let's just say they were not running any discount specials. So yeah, 10 bucks later, we had two soft drinks and some pretzels. Nothing made sense. Everything was more painful than it should have been. But eventually we got to Colorado. Wow. I mean, the trip actually went really well despite the foibles of a jackleg airline called Mark Air. And the epilogue for this story, by the way, is that apparently Mark Air went into bankruptcy that same year. Within 24 months, all of its assets had been liquidated. It joined the ranks of failed airlines in U.S. aviation history. And I'll be honest with you, the failure of Mark Air was not their discounted ticket prices or their airfare fleet or even their staff per se. It was this ostentatious and completely insensitive manner in which they made every aspect of traveling more painful than it had to be. And that, my friends, is my point. I am looking back right now on the past 4 years, and I cannot help but think that there are folks in positions of authority who made everything about our lives way more painful than it had to be. I mean, really. We've been passengers on the most awful left-wing airlines, it seems like, and every one of us has been stuck in the backseat by the toilets. Over the past 4 years, the advancements of government into our lives have accelerated at levels never seen before. And yet, government always seemed bloated and less efficient, even to the point of being dangerously and ridiculously inefficient. The progressive left was empowered to do all they could think of. I mean, as if our very culture was one big laboratory rat for their experiments. Gender fluidity? Sure. Soft on crime? Why not? Spend taxpayer money on retooling the private sector auto industry? Sure, of course. The border is secure, you silly cretins. We don't care how many illegals are flooding your streets. Thank you, sir. May I have another? The economy's great. The electric vehicle's awesome. China's our friend. Riots are largely peaceful protests. I mean, you name it. They felt entitled to try it, or at least lie about it. It's been 4 years of an anything-goes, nothing-is-off-the-limits, left-wing smorgasbord, and we were the main course. And don't you dare speak up about it, by the way. Blame and shame on you if you dare to espouse the opinion that the left might be wrong. Don't even think about having a differing opinion. How dare you speak of traditional values and conservative principles? Who are you to ask questions? And if you ask questions, you're among the unclean, barely worthy of the government that is doing all it can to give you a backseat by the toilets. But by God, we took it back. By God, we took it back. As surely as Mark Ayer went bankrupt in record time because its service was awful, the people of America spoke up and said, stop the madness. Look, this nation is filled with solid people who will rally to a cause and do what is needed until you tell them they have no free will or no choices, and at that point, you lose your audience. Mark Ayer was a failed airline, not because it couldn't fly planes. It was a failed airline because it punished its passengers for daring to buy a ticket on their flight. The Democrats and their newly shaved head 4B radical base lost because at every turn, they seemed determined to punish the American people in the middle of an already difficult time. It's like for the past 4 years, every seat on the left-wing airline is a back row by the toilet. And now, just like good old Mark Ayer, they're finally out of business. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way. Yeah, I mean, I kid you not. Oh, you haven't flown Mark Ayer, have you? Listen, they said that to us like 9 times on this one flight. Just getting on the plane was painful. But it shouldn't have to be that way, and neither should life in the greatest nation on the face of the earth. The very idea that our government made us feel like life had to be more painful for them to do their job is actually wrong. And I am so glad we put them out of business. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just pulling pins on truth grenades. That's what I'm saying. All right, we got you know, picks for the Trump administration are coming in fast and hard. I mean, we're still wondering right now. Cash Patel is in the mix for potentially FBI. I'm going to be honest with you. I am still for the idea of General Michael Flynn being the head of the FBI, which I think would be righteous. It would be karma. It would be like watching roaches scatter when the lights are turned on. It's just, listen, I just put it on my Twitter, by the way. I just said, I'm saying General Mike Flynn to head up the FBI. Who's with me? We'll see if I get any response, but people are already hitting it. But yeah, you can follow me at @SenPhilWilliams, S-E-N Phil Williams. You can also go to rightside_media. Those are two X or Twitter accounts. We are broadcasting live on radio, but we are streaming live on both those X accounts. Also on, help me out here, brother, Rumble
on Twitch, on YouTube. And if you go to the rightsidemedia.org and the live stream page on there as well. And I just have to point out, we are so close to 500 followers on Twitter. I think last time I checked, we're at 469.
Come on.
It'd be great to get to 500. That'd be
500.
Awesome.
500. See, we just started this off, and y'all understand there are apparently thresholds you have to reach as a business before you can do certain things. And so 500 is the first magic number, and then we're going to go to 1,000, and then we're going to be at 1,000,000. It's going to be awesome. But y'all help us out. Go on Twitter and follow us at Right Side Media, and or you can also find us through our website, rightsidemedia.org. Listen, there's so much to talk about today, and not the least of which is y'all's input on the text lines, 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. You can text it or call it. D from Madison says, another perspective, and she gives me, I don't know what this
is. It's just a picture of a list of who the Sanders voted for, and the tweet says, I got Katie Britt's a puppet. So,
you know what's amazing to me, though? I look at this, And listen, I'm not going to fuss at people for having an opinion of a politician, but you better know what you're talking about, because one of the things that was so frustrating to me was being an elected official and having people tell me what they knew about me and they didn't know squat. Well, I know because you're down there in Montgomery, you're doing those things. No, actually, I'm not. And so, listen, D, if you don't like Katie Britt, make sure you've got a real reason and you're not just looking at chatter on somebody's social media. And I'm not just sitting here defending her, because I call balls and strikes. If I see a politician doing something I don't like, I was on Jeff Poore's show this morning, and I was calling out Governor Ivey pretty hard. So I'll do it. And I know Kay Ivey personally, but I was calling her out pretty hard. But the thing about, well, we don't believe she really voted the way she did. Well, you realize, don't you, by the way, they had to vote like two or three times to get to the final vote. And her first vote, she says, was for Rick Scott, after which Rick Scott didn't win, so he was out. So if she voted for somebody else later, that's because Rick Scott was already out by that point. And you know, I'll go ahead and touch on this, and I'm going to let her talk about it. And I'm going to ask her some hard questions when she comes on. I'm going to ask her point blank to clarify why people are saying what they're saying, or what she wants to clarify with regards to her vote, or why she chose Rick Scott, or why she chose John Thune. But here's the thing. People wonder, why has it got to be a secret ballot? Because it was not a Senate function, it was a caucus function. The caucus is actually considered a separate entity. But they're all elected officials in a caucus doing caucus things. It's different. You're in a caucus, it's almost like a business. You're allowed to go into executive session. You're allowed to have internal votes on matters that don't affect public policy. But Phil, they're picking the right person for the leadership. I know. But what they're also picking, though, is the leader of the caucus. The leader of the caucus becomes the de facto head of the Senate if they're in the majority or the minority leader. I am not going to defend somebody who does something wrong. But when I was in the Alabama State Senate, the first thing we had when we got elected in 2010 was we had a caucus meeting. And I'll never forget, we met down in Montgomery around a big conference table, and we're all there, and we're talking, and we're slapping hands. And then we realized we had two people that wanted to be the pro tem. And so rather than put everybody on the spot, we held a secret ballot for a competitive race to be our pro tem. Del Marsh won. More on that, more on a lot. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one right here, I'm talking about Alabama, y'all, Alabama. I mean to say, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. Okay, so D is doubling down on her text right now. So D is absolutely determined that Katie Britt's a liar. D, what is your point? She says, read the information. The votes were leaked. You were sent two lists. She claimed on social media she voted for Rick Scott. Evidence reveals something else. She's convincingly deceptive. Well, you know, Rick Scott actually thanked her for her support. So does that not count? So if you think Katie's the liar, then does that mean that Rick Scott's also the liar? D, think about what you're saying. What benefit would it be? What benefit would it be to someone who understands the machinations of Washington, D.C., to lie about something that could be so simply discovered if she had indeed lied? And I'm sure you're going to say, there's two lists and they were leaked. Okay, they were leaked. In other words, it's not a public record. So now you've chosen not to believe the person who said she did something and the person who said she did something for him. You've chosen to believe something that you say was leaked. I'm just telling you, at some point you got to look at this and go, dang, D, what is your point? And I'll be honest with you, this is all going to blow over soon. John Thune got elected. I hate that. I wanted Rick Scott personally. But right now, I know that publicly, both my senators have said they supported the guy that I wanted to get. And when they had three people vying for it, what that meant was three people were vying for it, Cornyn, Thune, and Scott. They had one vote. She cast her vote for Rick Scott. He got the least amount of the three. Therefore, he was out of the next round of voting. Thune won the second round of voting. That's where we wound up. I can't fix it. But the truth of the matter is, it's also an internal caucus thing, and I don't know that you've got enough there to really convince the world she's truly lying, especially when she's out there. If she was staying silent in the face of your claims, then I would say, something's up. What's going on? She won't bother. If she's out there saying, poppycock, here's what I did, and the guy who I voted for has actually thanked me for it, then, you know. Anyway, enough of that. Darlene from Decatur says, we also cast the evil out of the Capitol and ask God to put righteous people in the high places of government while raising our hands toward the Capitol. It's really, oh, I'm sorry. Was there a big text before that? I just realized. Okay, I am so sorry, Darlene. I read the second half of what you said. It's a long text. Let me see. She says, I've been noticing Trump's pick for his cabinets. When my husband and I were talking about Tulsi Gabbard last night, he said that she will be over the agency that marked her as a suspicious person and put her on the no-fly list. Yes, she will, which is righteous. And now she'll be the one in charge of him. It also reminded me of Mordecai getting Haman's job in the Book of Esther. A few others who Trump appointed are going to do the same thing. It's exciting to me because Lou Engel felt led to call the Esthers to pray. 350,000 women gathered in D.C. We prayed in unity, and now everything is falling into place and so similar to Esther, Mordecai, and her people. And then she talked about the casting out of the Capitol. That's great stuff, Darlene, and I'm so glad you were there. I had a chance to go to when Promise Keepers was on the mall in D.C. Back in the 90s, and we had literally, I know, a million men on the mall in D.C., and we prayed, and it was I mean, you could feel it. It was an amazing moment. But I think that kind of thing needs to occur on a regular basis. I heard once that Norman Vincent Peale was asked, why do we need to ask for the Holy Spirit to fill us on a regular basis? And he said, because we leak. So anyway, Darlene, thank you for that. I appreciate you. Mike from Florence says, just like January 6th, if they can't take Trump down personally, they'll continue to go after those around him. Matt Gaetz, Katie Britt, all of them. Fair. And look what they did to Mike Flynn. I mean, good Lord. That's a man who, you talk about having his life turned upside down by basically an activist DOJ. Brad from Laredo, Tennessee says, has the head of the ATF been announced? I don't think it has. I don't think it has. Have you seen anything on that, ATF?
No, I have
I don't
not.
Believe so yet. No, nope, not yet. I'm hoping that this time around they'll have somebody who actually knows which end is the business end of a firearm. It seems to me that during an ATF function, there was something about not even having ever fired a gun before. I mean, it was just ridiculous. John from Athens says, ask her one question. It's a simple yes or no. No tap dancing. Is she going to vote yes to every one of Trump's picks? There you have your answer. I think what she's going to say is this. I think what she's going to say is he's going to get his picks. I think she's going to say, I will do whatever it takes, whether it be a recess appointment to stand out of the way of that or to make sure they get put through. I don't think she's opposed to them. Now, I will be honest with you. I think there's people in D.C. and maybe even her who are not real wild about some of them. Matt Gaetz is bringing baggage to the game unnecessarily, but he's also bringing, you know, a lot of other stuff that's good. We'll wait and see. So they have a right to their opinion. They got elected to listen to their constituents, but also vote their conscience. So we're going to find out what she has to say about it, but appreciate the text. Kyle from Madison says, Kash Patel has a legal background. He's a former attorney, so he's more likely to avoid the potential legal process issues or other deep state tricks. General Flynn would be better in different areas than the FBI. If you got one, Kyle, let me know what you think. Tell me where you think he would go. I think Mike Flynn, if he wants to come back to D.C., he ought to be given the job of his choice. But I like FBI. I mean, can you imagine? I think he goes down there and, like, he's the head of the FBI. General Mike Flynn names one of the latrines after Peter Strzok. Come on. You know, that's funny. Just saying.
That would be funny. Very funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Paul says, yeah, Lieutenant General Flynn for FBI. Yes. Karma. Paul in Huntsville. Jeff from Indiana says, I think someone ought to make a meme of the Biden administration with Biden piloting the Afghanistan Globemaster taking off with people running beside it and falling off as it taxis out. Kind of reminds me of how some of the crazy Democrats trying to hold on to a failed administration when they just don't realize they're better off on Trump air. At least that's at least the plane flies. Wow. That is a good meme, actually.
Yeah, I'm sure somebody's made one of that before.
A couple more, and then I'll jump into my topic. John from Huntsville says, Phil, spectacular monologue. Thank you, John. Also, JP, who do you got winning tonight in the Washington versus UCLA game? Who do you got?
So last week I said UCLA would lose because I didn't think they were very good, and then they ended up winning. But I think Washington will beat UCLA tonight still.
How about Arizona versus Houston?
That one, I got Arizona in that game.
Yeah, I would say. He said also, I'm predicting Purdue to beat Alabama tonight in basketball.
Yeah, big time basketball game tonight. Number 2, Alabama versus number 13, Purdue. So I'll be tuning into that for sure.
Save it for JP on sports.
Yep. Stay tuned for that.
Wrapping this up, Alif Mathen says, Colonel, the only thing that you could add to the Mark Air experience from your monologue is being put on hold for a few minutes of shy of 2 hours, literally in the middle of the night, so you could actually make a reservation. I was not sorry to see them go. Wow, Allie. Allie's flown on Mark Air. Allie. You've flown on Mark Air. You're the only other person I know of in the world besides Charlene and I who I can point to and said, they've flown on Mark Air. My friend Allie has flown on Mark Air. It's real. It's not just me. It's real. I told you. Richard from Madison says, naming a latrine after Peter Stock is an insult to latrines and their contents everywhere. Oh, wow. And then Brian from Huntsville says, wow, promise keepers. Jesus is power. Prayer is the means to have that power flow through oneself. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, brother. All right, listen, let me jump into my stuff here. Coming up top of the hour, we're going to have a call with U.S. Senator Katie Britt. We'll give her a chance to talk through the online chatter of all the people that think they know things. And listen, she may surprise me. I may get in there and hear something I didn't know, and I'll go, wait, what'd you just say? But here's the thing. The Senate as a whole, what is happening in the Senate? Well, first of all, just know this. The Senate, is it huge for us? Yes, it is. Oh, gosh, yes, it is. Can you imagine? We don't have to see Chuck Schumer do his press conferences. Now, he'll still do them as minority leader. I assume he's going to be minority leader. I mean, the Democrats can't seem to get rid of their baggage, but I'm assuming that he's still going to be the majority leader or a minority. If not, I'd love to know who is. But that being said, we got a lot of things happening. First of all, the leader now of the incoming chair of the Senate Republican Campaign Committee, and that's a big deal. The National Senate Republican Campaign Committee, the NRSC, that's basically a caucus function. It's outside of elected office. It's the one that is designed to put together strategies for advancing the caucus cause, if you will, in politics. So it is not a function of true governance. It's outside of governance. It's in fact, you're not supposed to even do business, if I'm not mistaken. You can't do business for the Senate Republican Senatorial Committee inside the Capitol building. You have to do it outside. But the new guy is Senator Tim Scott. I've been waiting to see whether Tim Scott's going to have a position in the Trump administration. And I think he would have earned that. But what we know right now, though, is that he sees himself as better suited for the overall cause. He is a statesman, by the way. If you watch Tim Scott, the man's a statesman. He is not afraid to say, bigger than me, I need to work on that and go for it. He said his job for 2026 is to increase the majority. Well, I'm for that, because right now it looks like we're going to be, when all is said and done, somewhere around, what's the number here? I think it's 53-47, which is great. We got a 6 margin? Wow, that's huge. Not including, oh, by the way, the fact that the vice president can preside and add another vote if ever necessary. But Senator Tim Scott is going to be the head of the Senate Republican or Senatorial Committee. And he basically said that we've got an interesting map coming up in 2026. The U.S. Senate is not the one that starts, you know, the processes sometimes. But they are certainly the ones that confirm. And listen, we may well see 1 to 2 new appointments necessary for the U.S. Supreme Court. Think about how important that is. Guess who confirms them? The Senate. And you want to have a majority that can push that through. What we're looking at right now is 53-47. And in 2024... we had a decent map. 2026 is going to be a slightly different electoral landscape for us. We've got several that we think we can flip. Think about this. Senator Ossoff of Georgia, Senator Peters of Michigan. They are both Democrats in battleground states that Trump just flipped. We have a chance to possibly pick up those 2 seats in a few years. Senator Shaheen of New Hampshire, up for re-election. In Virginia, Trump just lost by 5 points, but Mark Warner's up for re-election. So what does that mean for us? And then you look at all these states, but then we've got Republican Susan Collins, who is like a quasi-Republican, sort of Republican, wears an R by her name, but not always voting Republican. But Susan Collins of Maine is up for re-election in a blue state, and Tom Tillis of North Carolina is also up in a state that Trump narrowly won. So we've got some stuff there that we might lose a couple, but still gain some. A lot can happen. And Tim Scott's the guy who's going to be chairing the committee to try and expand the majority. Now, what's John Thune going to do? Well, I'll tell you what he said as soon as we get back from this break. John Thune is going to be the new Senate Majority Leader. Is he going to help get these Trump appointments done? Well, stand by. I'll tell you all about it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. All right, listen, let me jump into my stuff here. Coming up top of the hour, we're going to have a call with U.S. Senator Katie Britt. We'll give her a chance to talk through the online chatter of all the people that think they know things. And listen, she may surprise me. I may get in there and hear something I didn't know, and I'll go, wait, what'd you just say? But here's the thing. The Senate as a whole, what is happening in the Senate? Well, first of all, just know this. The Senate, is it huge for us? Yes, it is. Oh, gosh, yes, it is. Can you imagine we don't have to see Chuck Schumer do his press conferences. Now, he'll still do them as minority leader. I assume he's going to be minority leader. I mean, the Democrats can't seem to get rid of their baggage, but I'm assuming that he's still going to be the majority leader or a minority. If not, I'd love to know who is. But that being said, we got a lot of things happening. First of all, the leader now of the incoming chair of the Senate Republican Campaign Committee, and that's a big deal. The National Senate Republican Campaign Committee, the NRSC, that's basically a caucus function. It's outside of elected office. It's the one that is designed to put together strategies for advancing the caucus cause, if you will, in politics. So it is not a function of true governance. It's outside of governance. In fact, you're not supposed to even do business, if I'm not mistaken. You can't do business for the Senate Republican Senatorial Committee inside the Capitol building. You have to do it outside. But the new guy is Senator Tim Scott. I've been waiting to see whether Tim Scott's going to have a position in the Trump administration. And I think he would have earned that. But what we know right now, though, is that he sees himself as better suited for the overall cause. He is a statesman, by the way. If you watch Tim Scott, the man's a statesman. He is not afraid to say, bigger than me, I need to work on that and go for it. He said his job for 2026 is to increase the majority. Well, I'm for that, because right now it looks like we're going to be, when all is said and done, somewhere around, what's the number here? I think it's 53-47, which is great. We got a 6 margin? Wow, that's huge. Not including, oh, by the way, the fact that the vice president can preside and add another vote if ever necessary. But Senator Tim Scott is going to be the head of the Senate Senatorial Committee. And he basically said that we've got an interesting map coming up in 2026. The U.S. Senate is not the one that starts, you know, the processes sometimes, but they are certainly the ones that confirm. And listen, we may well see 1 to 2 new appointments necessary for the U.S. Supreme Court. Think about how important that is. Guess who confirms them? The Senate. And you want to have a majority that can push that through. What we're looking at right now is 53-47, and in 2024, we had a decent map. 2026 is going to be a slightly different electoral landscape for us. We've got several that we think we can flip. Think about this. Senator Ossoff of Georgia, Senator Peters of Michigan. They are both Democrats in battleground states that Trump just flipped. We have a chance to possibly pick up those 2 seats in a few years. Senator Shaheen of New Hampshire, up for re-election. In Virginia, Trump just lost by 5 points, but Mark Warner's up for re-election. So what does that mean for us? And then you look at all these states, but then we've got Republican Susan Collins, who is like a quasi-Republican, sort of Republican, wears an R by her name, but not always voting Republican. But Susan Collins of Maine is up for re-election in a blue state, and Tom Tillis of North Carolina is also up in a state that Trump narrowly won. So we've got some stuff there that we might lose a couple but still gain some. A lot can happen. And Tim Scott's the guy who's going to be chairing the committee to try and expand the majority. Now, what's John Thune going to do? Well, I'll tell you what he said as soon as we get back from this break. John Thune is going to be the new Senate Majority Leader. Is he going to help get these Trump appointments done? Well, stand by. I'll tell you all about it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Just making common sense like a superpower. All right, coming up top of the hour, U.S. Senator Katie Britt checking in with us. We'll have her on the air just after 3 o'clock. So Senate, that's number one. I just call this one Senate because Senate, I mean, the advice and consent of the Senate to the executive branch is key. It's one of those checks and balances moments that the founding fathers put into place, which worked quite well. We handle things the same way in the state level Senate. So in the Alabama State Senate, any number of times I was present for votes on confirmations for things like boards of trustees, cabinet members to the governor, and they were literally going to wind up being, something that somebody wanted, but we still made them come through the process. But there's a thing that happens in the U.S. Senate that you wonder if they'll be allowed to use it. And Trump is asking for them to let them use it. It's called a recess appointment. What does that mean? According to the U.S. Constitution, the advice and consent of the U.S. Senate is necessary for the confirmation of cabinet officials. Unless there is a recess of the Senate and somebody needs to be appointed to fill a vacancy. Well, keep in mind, back when all this was established, you know, the founders, they would go home and they'd be gone for months at a time, get in their carriages and ride home, right? But now it's quite different. But what the Democrats did to Trump in the last go round was make sure that he constantly had a problem. They would actually hold what's known as a pro forma session. They would never truly go into recess. They would leave. If everybody went home for a holiday, if everybody went home for a regular recess, they wouldn't call it that. They would adjourn at the call of the chair, and then they would hold pro forma sessions. One person was tapped, and they would rotate it. One person was tapped to stay behind, and they would walk in every day with a gavel, gavel it open, gavel it closed, and that way they could say the Senate was still in session. And you could not get a recess appointment done because a recess appointment means, in the absence of the Senate, he can appoint somebody for upwards of 2 years so they can do the work. So Trump is saying, I just want to get started. I want to get busy. All of y'all agree with me. Everybody agrees with my mandates. Everybody agrees with my policies. Everybody agrees that I was the candidate. I was the top of the ticket. I ran on getting this done. You know what I went through last time. Let's don't do it again. Don't slow the process down. They're going to try to fight us tooth and nail. Don't make us wait. I want recess appointment power. And John Thune is saying this. Story on Fox News. Senator John Thune is now going to be the Senate Majority Leader. In other words, he will guide and direct and lead the entire Senate, and he will set the schedule. He'll decide pretty much what comes to the floor. He says all the options are on the table to get President-elect Trump's cabinet picks through the confirmation process. Story here on Fox News, Dateline yesterday. Thune from South Dakota told Fox News chief political anchor Brett Baer that Senate Republicans are going to work with Trump to see that he gets his team installed as quickly as possible so he can implement his agenda. But then he went on to say this, and I don't mean this like he's couching his words, but he says there's a process they have to go through. You know, the advice and consent. That's the Senate's constitutional role. When it comes to confirmation and nomination to the executive branch, we take that role seriously. But we're also not going to allow Democrats to obstruct or block President Trump and the will of the American people. Okay. I appreciate him saying that. But the question still remains, does that mean, Senator Thune, you will not oppose recess appointments? Because let me back up. The government is not Trump. Does everybody hear that? Phil, what did you just say? I said, the government is not Trump. I love President Trump. I'm excited. I can't hardly stand the idea of him having to wait till January to get sworn in. I'm for it like tomorrow. So I don't take this as anything other than me saying I also love the law. And I love the Constitution that established the tripart, you know, stool upon which our government stands. We have three branches of government, and one branch cannot tell the other branch how to act. And so if one branch has a job, which in this case is the advice and consent confirmation process, and they can do it expeditiously, then they should. If they can't, and there's a provision that allows the president to operate, they should all go home for Christmas and let him work. You know what I'm saying? Bethune was asked about recess appointments to get Trump's picks through. He says this. He says, well, it's an option. He says, but obviously it does take, you know, you have to have all Republicans vote to recess. So what he's saying is, I don't get to decide that. He said, other senators have to join me in calling for and voting for the recess. So if somebody opposes Matt Gaetz and they're a Republican, they can still jimmy up the works, is me paraphrasing. But he says, you got to have concurrence from the House then too. There's a process. It's all a process, but nothing's off the table. In other words, what he's saying is, don't think it's a shoe-in, but do understand we're open for it. Coming up next, U.S. Senator Katie Britt. We'll talk to her about all of it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two here on a Friday afternoon in week number two of freedom. But we're going to go right now to the phones. U.S. Senator Katie Britt is one of our two senators representing the great state of Alabama in Washington, D.C. She has been in office now for just a few years, and she's already making a name for herself. But we're going to talk to her right now about several things that have happened just in recent days. U.S. Senator Katie Britt, how are you doing?
I am doing wonderfully, Phil, and it's always good to be on. Thank you for the opportunity to be on with you in front of your listeners. I just traveled near you. I came to speak to Boys and Girls Club of Alabama, and now headed back home for speech and debate and football playoff games.
Well, outstanding. Get you a good weekend full of football. I'm headed to the Auburn game tomorrow myself, so good
nice,
for you.
Nice.
Hey,
good deal.
Let me. I want to go ahead and I want to go straight into something. There's all the social media chatter right now, and I remember what that's like, even in my you know state level position. What it's like to see social media chatter when people are saying things about you, whether they're true or not. So, listen, I want to get straight to it. The vote for John Thune to become Senate Majority Leader. There were three. There were John Thune, there was Cornyn, and there was Rick Scott.
Yeah, that's right.
You have said you openly supported Rick Scott for the first round of voting, after which he had to drop out because he didn't make the level necessary. But and other people are claiming that's not true. Deal with the question right now. Did you, in fact, vote for Rick Scott?
Absolutely. I voted for Rick Scott. I made sure that he knew that I was voting for him, as well as Mike Lee. As many of your listeners know, obviously, my approach to this was that of taking time with each of my colleagues that were running. I have a good relationship with each of them. That's been proven to be beneficial for the values of our state as we fight for those, for our people of our state, and gave each one of those men an opportunity to make their case. I had two calls. The freshman class actually had a call with all three gentlemen where we asked them a series of questions. And, you know, that was great because I got to hear the perspective of my other freshman colleagues, the kinds of questions they were asking, the answers they were getting, et cetera. I had independent calls with each of those men the 2 weeks prior. So all of that, the 2 weeks prior to the actual vote, and told each of them we would wait. Senator Mike Lee, who you know is a strong conservative stalwart there in the United States Senate,
right.
He runs the Conservative Steering Committee, held a forum, a candidate forum, where he wanted everyone to get their questions answered, and he wanted people to make their quote-unquote closing arguments. I have the greatest respect for Mike and agreed to participate and listen to that without giving my support before then and coming in, asking those final questions. My question to each of them in that forum was, How are you going to be different than Mitch McConnell? You know, how are you different than the previous leadership? Because at the end of the day, I want change. I want the Senate to operate differently. I want power to not be hoarded by just the majority and minority leader, but I want it to be dispersed between all 100 senators as our forefathers had intended. I want the committee process to work. I want the appropriations process to work. I want us to actually, business as usual has got to be out the window. And so as we did that, I let Mike Lee know, you know, where I was going with this. Also, I let Senator Scott know. Was really proud, obviously, both of them came out and said, hey, we appreciate your vote. We appreciate your support. You know, Rick had both a vision and the will. He has the relationships. He has the background to do the kind of overhaul that we need right now. And so was proud to vote for Rick Scott. And, you know, I think another thing for your listeners, Phil, many people, I mean, obviously I've heard pushback, well, you know, that Senator Tuberville handled it differently. He came out 2 days earlier. And you have to, you know, rewind. That's what he did last time as well. You know, I mean, he came out for Mitch McConnell. He said, this is who I'm voting for. He said, this is, you know, and I let this process play out. I let each of the men make their closing arguments and then made my choice and let people know. And the last thing I would say on that, Phil, the other thing I've heard pushback on is that there are lists out there that don't include me.
And that's what I want to ask you about, because people are putting out lists and saying there's lists that don't include your name. And how do you address that?
So I think this is actually really easy for your listeners. First off, one of the lists that came out had actually had John Thune voting for John Cornyn, okay? Out of everything that I am certain about, you can put on the list that it was not the case. So there were simple things like that were just wrong on that list. Next, if you take the number of people, so there were 13 votes total for Rick Scott. There were 2 write-in votes. If you take the number of people who have publicly said they voted for Rick Scott, that includes me, and you obviously know that Rick Scott, another thing you can be certain about is that Rick Scott voted for himself as well, that makes 10 people. That is the only 10 people in the entire United States Senate who have said, we voted for Rick Scott. So there are actually 3 outstanding names on that list that we don't know who they are. So the talk of, oh, there are too many names and she can't fit, is simply not true. There are only 9 of us who have come out and said, we voted for Rick Scott. There are 13 total votes for Rick Scott. So these lists you're saying, unfortunately, are fabricated. They are untruthful. But at the end of the day, not only do I give you my word, Rick Scott and Mike Lee have backed up that I gave them mine before the vote as well.
Well, I'm gonna pretty much call that subject closed. And I don't know why it will matter a week from now, to be honest, except that most of the world, I think the conservative world, especially Alabamians, did want Rick Scott to be in because, like you, we wanted change. So my next question is, knowing full well that John Thune is the guy now, are we going to see change?
Look, I was really encouraged, you know, while disappointed that we weren't able to build the momentum around Rick, I am really encouraged that immediately after the vote, you saw John Thune get on the phone with Donald Trump. You saw a conversation occur. Every single man, I will tell you, first off, the Crimson Tide, by the way, came up about 4 times in leadership elections, I kid you not, which was pretty amazing. Marco Rubio started his speech for Rick Scott and said, you know, guys, look, all 3 of these men are good men. He said, I kind of feel like Nick Saban and the team he had with the 3 quarterbacks that ended up all starting in the NFL at the same time. I kid you not, Phil. He said, do y'all remember it was Jalen Hurts and Tua Tagovailoa and Mac Jones all on one team? He said, what I'm telling you is we got 3 great guys up here. And obviously, you know, whichever way we go, he was clearly for Rick Scott. But that being said, you know, doubling down on, look, we received a message from the American people on November 5th. And every one of those men, when they stood up and gave their remarks, talked about understanding that and understanding the importance of getting moving immediately on President Trump's agenda. immediately on getting President Trump's team in place, immediately on actually enacting legislation and change. We have a real opportunity with reconciliation.
Okay.
Your listeners may know this, but when you have the House, the Senate, and the White House, and you are changing between two administrations, you are reconciling the budgets. And the first thing we'll have to do is pass a budget resolution, but we can pass things that you know, the parliamentarian has to say, okay, yes, this works, but we can pass things in that process at 51 votes. So it is a real moment for us,
yeah.
You know, with that and the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. So it was clear, Phil, that President Trump's agenda, putting the country back on track, the mandate and the voice that America said,
let me jump in, though.
Everybody,
Senator,
understands it.
Let me jump in, though, because one of the questions that still remains out there that John Thune did address in a Fox News interview with Bret Baier, but he kind of couched his terms a little bit. People are concerned whether or not Trump's going to be allowed to have recess appointments as necessary. Do you think that recess appointments are on the table?
I do. I think everything is on the table. I think now we want to get to work immediately. What we've been talking about is we're sworn in on January 3rd. So we're talking about let's go right into hearings for these individuals. The goal would be to have these hearings complete, as many of them as possible, by the time that President Trump gets sworn in as the 47th President of the United States and J.D. Vance the Vice President, so that we can immediately have those floor votes following that. So,
Is there anybody in that list? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. No, and what I heard from each of those men, so, you know, being a part of this process, it's healthy because what we were able to do, so you think about this, we were able to ask these types of tough questions to all three of those men in that forum. You know, we were to say, what are you going to do about recess? What are you going to do about this? What are we going to do about, the budget? What are we going to do about this? And so that was our moment, you know, by allowing them that opportunity, it gave us an opportunity to put them on notice and to get answers and commitments to our questions about how we're going to do this.
So all
three of them said yes.
I hope.
Go ahead.
But all three of them said yes. At a time they needed a vote, the question is going to be, you know, whether Thune will lead in that way. And I hope he does, because like you, I wanted change. Like you and like many of our voters out there, our listeners out there, we wanted a different version of Senate. But that being said, is there any one of the appointments? I mean, there's a lot of talk about Matt Gaetz, and I got news. I got reservations about Matt Gaetz. But is there any one of these appointments that you feel like could wind up jimmying up the works or maybe not even make it through? Which one has the most trouble in your opinion?
Look, you know, obviously you're pointing to one that we have seen, you know, people talk about. I think what you have to do is you have to realize the president has a prerogative to appoint his cabinet. Now, we, under the Constitution, obviously advise and consent. But so what we need to do is to come into that process, you know, and ask those questions. The people that do have concerns have that opportunity in these Senate hearings to get those questions answered. And so then we can assess what's in front of us, and then we can move forward for a vote. I do not believe that any one person, if there is somebody that is more challenging to get across the finish line than others, or something is said or happens in a hearing that makes their confirmation more difficult. Listen, I think all hands are on deck to get as many cabinet appointments done as fast as we can, you know, obviously doing our due diligence through the process. But I think we let all of them move through the process, and then I think the leader schedules the most clear-cut votes first. You know, if you're having trouble, you don't let that hang up everything else. And I think there is enough momentum in the Republican conference, and we have gotten enough commitments through this leadership process, this process of selecting a leader, that I think we can hold them accountable to moving fast and efficient and thoroughly.
Okay.
and getting some things done.
So I'm gonna put you on the spot with one last question. You ready? You called in graciously to our live stream on election night. We had a great night that night. We had hundreds and hundreds of people that were dialed in with us and watching. And I don't know if you remember you said this, but I said something about it's looking like it's going to be a whole new day and we look forward to seeing what the Senate looks like. And you said, I do too, with a gavel in my hand. Do you expect a chairmanship sometime in the near future? You said it, not me. I'm just asking what you meant by it.
Yes, yes. Well, it'll be a subcommittee. It'll be a subcommittee. subcommittee gavel. I don't quite have the years under my belt for a full committee gavel, but I will have a subcommittee gavel. We don't know which one yet, but I am really excited because, you know, so what that means is I get to actually call the hearings. I get to pick the witnesses, you know, the majority of the witnesses, and have an opportunity to drive conversation and get answers and things on the record that the American people need so that we can, hey, have a new day and change this country for the better, going back to the foundational principles that made it so great in the first place.
Well, Senator, listen, I know you're traveling right now. I think we had a little bit of gap in your signal there just for a half a second, so I'm going to – anyway, I got to go to a break anyway, but I really appreciate your time. Look, best of luck to you. I know what it's like to be chatted about online, and but stay in the fight and keep us posted, all right?
Hey, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you. U.S. Senator Katie Britt, and boy, I ran long. So go take us right to the break there, brother. We'll process what she said momentarily when we get back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, saving the world one soundbite at a time. All right, listen, the bottom line is that was a good conversation. I tried to be as direct as I can without being rude because I don't like rude. I hope I asked the questions direct enough for some of y'all. And I'll be honest with you, if you're still out there right now having heard that interview and you're determined that she's lying, then nothing can fix it at that point. I mean, you heard from me, you heard from and who am I? I just know what my own personal experiences have been like about why things are done the way they are. You heard from her directly, and I would like to think that that should mean something. You heard that the person who she's been accused of not voting for thanked her for voting for him. And you've heard that she actually went to Senator Mike Lee, who's one of the most conservative members of the legislative process in D.C. overall, and told him in advance, I will be voting for Rick Scott. So we're done. I got nothing else on this. I mean, is there anything else we can say on this?
Well, I was just going to say I cracked up during her interview because she brought up the list that had John Thune voting for Cornyn, and I went back and looked at the picture of the list that was texted in our text line, and it's you see John Thune voted for Cornyn on it. And,
yeah, that didn't happen.
It's you know, I'm going to go on a limb and say that did not happen.
That
so
did not happen.
It begs to question the credibility of said list that is going around on the internet.
Yeah, and here's the other thing, too. How would you feel if you were openly saying something that you had done, you felt like you could prove that you had done it, and then someone claimed they had a piece of paper leaked from an anonymous source that says you didn't, and that meant more. Listen, I will call balls and strikes, and I will tell you, and when the day comes, and it hasn't yet, but when the day comes that Katie Britt commits herself to a vote that I don't agree with, I will say so on the air. I will. I'll even go so far as to ask her or her people about it. I will. I've done it before. I have registered my thoughts and opinions with politicians, and I have been one. So I'm just saying, I'll call balls and strikes right now. The idea that she lied, we're done with that.
And I mean, she's been nothing but a rock star her whole time as a senator. So she hasn't given me any reason to believe she's a rhino. Dun dun dun. Yeah. You know, okay. Drives me nuts. Anyways,
fair enough, man. I know we don't have much time right now, and we got JP on sports coming. A bunch of y'all are texting in right now. Jay from Killen says, "Good job with Britt." Thank you, Jay. Appreciate it. Brand new texter in the line. We're glad you're there, Terry from Section, Alabama. Says, if the Republican Party does not stay together to support President Trump, we will be defeated by the leftist party in the midterms. It's time to be in one accord to move our country in the right direction. Totally agree. Totally agree. Charlene was saying the same thing. We got to quit eating our own. It's just totally. Flip from Decatur says, JP, Tyson or Paul tonight? We'll talk about that during sports, right? Are we going to
yes,
talk about
will.
It?
Yes, we will.
Okay, good. Keep me tabbed on time. I can't hear the music.
Well, we got about 5 seconds.
Okay, good. And Scott from Athens says that the DOJ doesn't prosecute Gates for whatever reason, and the Ethics Commission has been sitting quietly, many, many heads should roll, innocent until proven guilty. I'm not sure. I go back and process his text. But I get what you're saying. Oh, all right. We're going to step aside from politics. We're going to do some JP on sports. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one I'm talking about, Alabama, y'all. And I mean to say, This show goes like way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. Let's stop talking about politics and wokeness and stuff for a minute. Let's talk about something we can all get our hands around, a little sports. This is where we like to dive in and get some sports trivia, some sports facts and figures, and some sports knowledge that comes from somebody who knows it better than I do. I can just tell you that. Many of y'all may not know, but JP is not just a pretty face. He's not just the guy that knows how to push buttons in the studio. He actually has his own sports show on Saturday mornings on the Ump out of Huntsville. He and Kelsey do off the bench. Mm-hmm. What, 9 to 11?
9 to 11. We go through our list of 10 games, top 10 games for the day, break them down, and then we're always joined by a guest picker to end the show. And we were delighted to be joined by Tupperville last week. It was a great interview, and delighted to be joined by singer and songwriter this week. Kelsey's friend is Brandon Elder, who will be joining us.
That's cool.
So yeah, we're excited to have him on, and yeah. Make sure to tune in.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's hit some of this JP on sports. Give me a sound effect. You ready? JP on sports. All right, let's do it. So we do this thing in two phases, right? The first section, we call it the three and out. Mm-hmm. You give us our top three, and then we come back from the break, and you do the two-minute warnings. Three and out, brother. Go.
Well, we got a big game in the SEC this week of Tennessee versus Georgia. This game has a lot of SEC championship implications. If off the top of my head, I believe correctly, if Georgia wins, Alabama has a significant chance of being in the SEC championship against Texas. But if Tennessee wins, it's a high likelihood that it would be Tennessee versus Texas. I believe in that scenario. I've seen about like 10 different scenarios on Twitter of this happens, then this will be the championship, you know. But from my recollection, from what I understand, if you're an Alabama fan, you want Alabama in the SEC championship, you need to be rooting for Georgia this weekend.
So you got to root for Georgia now.
Well, the question is too, if you're an Alabama fan, do you want Alabama in the SEC championship game? Because if they lose that game, they'll get three losses, probably get bumped out of the playoffs. So you almost would rather them not make the SEC championship game and be safe with two losses. But nevertheless, let's get out of the weeds here a little bit.
Do you have a chart in your head where you see all this? Because I had trouble even tracking some of that. You see all that?
No, it's just what I pay attention to, you know. But you know, like I said, big game of Georgia versus Tennessee. Georgia coming off of a rough loss to Ole Miss at Ole Miss. They played really bad.
Yeah.
So they're looking to bounce back from that. Tennessee has been on a roll. Their only loss is to Arkansas this season, although they've had some nail biters that maybe should not have been nail biters and maybe let Mississippi State hang around for three quarters when they shouldn't have. They're still, you know, on a roll, but they got to go play Georgia this weekend. So that's a tough game. But yeah, this is the game. I'd say this is the game so far this year with the most amount of SEC championship implications that surround it. After this game, we'll have a pretty good idea who will be in it, unless some crazy stuff happens.
You going to make a prediction on it?
Man.
Come on.
I don't know. Right? This is a hard one to decide. I'm kind of leaning Georgia because if I remember correctly, it's at Athens. It'll be at Georgia. So yeah, if that is... If that is, I'll probably be leaning Georgia, but Tennessee is a hard team to beat. Even though they maybe haven't played their best football as of late, they're still pulling out wins, and yep, it is at Georgia. So I'm kind of leaning Georgia, but maybe the Bama and me wanting to see Bama in the SEC championship.
All right, so Georgia, between the hedges, got a chance to jimmy up everybody's life.
Yep, and if Georgia wins and some chaos happens, they may slip into the SEC championship. Who knows? But they're on the bubble. They're not even in the playoffs right now. You know, the playoff committee did their latest rankings on Tuesday, and Georgia is on the outside looking in right now, which is kind of crazy if you think about it.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
But you got teams like Indiana in there who, while they're undefeated, have not even played have not even beaten a bowl eligible team yet this year. So it's like, there's a lot of controversy on that. But yeah, Georgia, if they win this one, hopefully they can slip into the playoffs. If you're a Dogs fan.
A lot of recreational weed going on in the decision making.
Yeah,
just saying.
Yeah.
All right, that's number one of the three and out. Number two, what you got?
Well, both Alabama and Auburn have. I wouldn't call them cupcake games, but they're. It's a nice break for them, but still, you got to talk about the Alabama-Mercer game, because Mercer right now is they've only got one loss on the year, and they're number one in the SoCon, which is the conference with Chattanooga in it and some other teams I can't remember off the top of my head. But they're even though you look at, oh, it's Mercer, it's not really a cakewalk. You know, they're a good Mercer team. I think they're averaging around the same amount of points per game as Alabama is. So granted, they're playing not as good competition, but they're still a solid football team. But Alabama coming off of that dominant win against LSU, if you're an Alabama fan, you got to be encouraged, because you saw the play calling shift from trying to be cute to let's just do what works and let's do it over and over and over again and until they stop it, which was Jalen Milroe running the football, did really well in that game. LSU could not stop him, so I would like to see them do that more often of QB runs and let Jalen use his feet to beat the opposing team. So we'll see if they continue that in the Mercer game, and then after that you got Oklahoma at Norman, and then it's the Iron Bowl. It's creeping up on us. The Iron Bowl is coming up pretty soon. So, but yeah, even though it's Mercer, they're still a really good Group of Five team to go up against.
All right, but you said Auburn was one of the games that was a cupcake too. So did you mention much about Auburn and La Monroe this weekend?
No, not really.
Are you going to predict Auburn with a win? Like maybe finally?
Yes. Well, I had them beating Vanderbilt, and I said if they didn't do that, then I probably wouldn't predict them to win the rest of the year. And so, but I'll predict them to beat La Monroe. I would hope they could do that. They've had a rough go of things.
Listen,
as of lately.
I predict nothing.
Yeah.
I defer. I just go ahead and say, wow.
With college football and the chaos of this year, it's hard to predict much. But I think an Alabama win against Mercer and then an Auburn win against La Monroe will, I think those are pretty safe.
All right.
I would hope so.
Three and out. That's two. What's number three?
Well, I guess you rope in number three talking about Auburn, but I have to say we don't have a great slate of games in college football this week. Not a lot of ranked opponents. A lot of teams have quote cupcake games. I think the only really good game is the Alabama-Tennessee game. But I want to take this chance to talk about the playoff rankings right now, because as we're getting closer to the end of the year, we're starting to see a clearer picture of what it may look like. Come playoff season. Of who's going to be where, and like I said earlier, there's been a lot of controversy with certain teams being where they are, because I saw Saban on McAfee's show today talking about this. It seems with the 12-team playoffs, they're not taking into account as much strength of schedule and who teams have beaten, because you got, like I said, Penn State hasn't beaten a ranked opponent yet this year. And when they beat Illinois, I believe they're ranked, but Illinois is not ranked anymore. So as of the current rankings, Penn State doesn't have a ranked win under the belt, and they lost to Ohio State at home, and yet they're sitting at number four. And then you got Georgia with the amount of quality wins they have at sitting at 12 with the number one ranked strength of the schedule.
Wow.
And even though they're at 12 with how the rankings set up of it's really complicated, but they're on the outside looking in right now. So a lot of controversy around that. Alabama right now is sitting at 10, which they control their own destiny. If they win out, they'll be locked in. But then begs the question of if they make the conference championship, will they lose and get bounced out? So all that to say that there's been a lot of discussion with the college football playoff with how the rankings are shifting out, and it appears that they're taking less of a they're putting less weight on strength of schedule and more weight on rankings, which goes back to the BCS way of things, which is what they kind of wanted to get away from with the playoffs.
Yeah.
So it'll need some with the 12-team playoff, it'll need some some adjusting. And like what Saban talked about this morning, how college basketball has an RPI system of they have an algorithm sort of thing that put strength of schedule at an emphasis, and that's how they rank things. And we'd like to see that in the playoffs rankings. But all that to be said, coming to the end of the season, we're getting a better view on how it may look.
Is the bowl rankings? I mean, is it more science or more art?
It's more art. It has been more art, but it's kind of looking to be more of ranking records than the eye test, which is why we implemented playoffs in the first place, to get away from just the pure science algorithm spit out the best two teams. I don't have too many gripes, but there are Indiana being at five and Georgia being at 13, I believe, or 12 or 13 on the outside looking in. Doesn't seem right.
Where's Army right now?
Army, so they were at 25, I believe.
25.
They jumped up to 24 this week.
Okay.
But if they win the conference championship, they get an automatic bid in.
Okay. It's still crazy.
They still have an opportunity to do that.
So I'm an Army guy now. I'm still rooting Army because I've got more to look at and root for right now than I usually do.
It's fun having Army be good. You know, it seems like the last time they were this good was like the 40s. So it's been a long, long time.
It's because Trump got elected.
Maybe that is it. maybe the Service Academy. It's funny. I saw a funny tweet of, you know, there was the scandal of Michigan sign stealing, and they reverted to earpiece communications. And somebody tweets something of like, you mean the first year where they've had ear communications that appear to be more hackable that the Army and the Navy are both coincidentally good in the same year, where they study, you know, espionage, you know, at the universities, you know, is this a coincidence? Are they hacking the systems?
Things that make you go, Yeah. All right, brother, that's three and out. Top three are there. We're going to come back. We do a thing with JP on sports we call the 2-minute warning. He has a variety of topics that cover the gamut of sports, and he has 2 minutes on each one. I time it. We hit a buzzer even. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. More JP on sports when we get back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like making common sense like a superpower. All right, we're going back to round two of JP on sports. This is where we mix it up a little bit. He comes in with all kinds of topics. We call it the 2-minute warning. I actually keep a timer. There's a buzzer that sounds if he exceeds 2 minutes on a topic. 2-minute warnings. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Take it.
Well, we got a big-time basketball game tonight, like I talked about earlier with John Paul, of number 2 Alabama versus number 13 Purdue at Purdue tonight at 6 o'clock. This starts this brutal stretch for Alabama schedule-wise. So they got to play number 13 Purdue tonight. They got Illinois and Birmingham after that, and then they got to play Houston, who's number 8, and then Rutgers, who's number 24, in a tournament in Vegas. Then they got to play at number 10 North Carolina, and then they got number 14 Creighton at home. So that is that's a gauntlet of 6 games coming up right now for Alabama, and it starts tonight. But they've started off the season undefeated. They have not shot very well to start the year. They've maybe let some teams like Arkansas State hang around for a little bit longer than for Alabama fans is liking. But still, I think this team is going to be just fine. I mean, the roster is just stacked, and eventually, I mean, they're not going to be cold shooting for long, and hopefully they start that streak of getting back into it, shooting against Purdue tonight, and starting off this brutal gauntlet with a win. But yeah, some people are talking about this is the roughest stretch of any schedule of anybody in the country. I mean, you're playing 6 ranked teams. That's rough. But also on the flip side of things, Auburn is they got a big win against Houston, who I believe was ranked top 5 maybe at the time that they beat them, and it was at Houston. So it's a big time win for Auburn, and they shot up in the rankings too after that. So both teams in the state of Alabama, like I've said all this time, they're really good. But right now we may be seeing a top 5 matchup for Alabama and Auburn, the Iron Bowl on the court. So we got Alabama at number 2 right now and Auburn at number 5, with 2 people voted for Auburn to be number 1 in that ranking. So
nice.
The IBOB, the Iron Bowl of basketball this year. It's going to be a matchup for everybody across the country watching.
When's that date going to be?
I don't know off the top of my head, but I know SEC conference play starts around January, so early winter. It'll be interesting to see. That'd be fun. Normally the Iron Bowl of football is what gets the most attention, but it's fun for the IBOB of Iron Bowl of basketball getting some attention.
What would it take for us to do a live stream from the IBOB?
Now we're talking. That would be fun.
I'm sorry, you'd have to be back here pushing buttons while I'm down there at the court side. All right. Oh, dang. We ran past the 2. I just let you you just got 2 minutes and a half almost. All right, let me reset the clock and pay better attention this time. So 2-minute warning, go.
Well, we got a text earlier about it. We got Mike Tyson fighting tonight.
Come on.
Against Jake Paul.
58 years old.
Yeah, it's You know, I got to be honest, I was not very thrilled about this fight when it was announced, and I still don't know quite how I feel about it. I don't know how I feel about a 58-year-old Mike Tyson fighting a young 20-something-year-old Jake Paul who is jacked up on steroids, and Mike Tyson has nothing to add to his legacy with this win. Jake Paul has everything to add to his legacy for this win.
Will Tyson bite his ear?
That, you know, I'm not sure about that, but we saw yesterday at the face-off, Jake Paul accidentally stepped on Mike Tyson's toe, and Tyson slapped him really hard.
I just watched
And yeah, slapped him really hard. So Tyson is very amped up for this fight. He's talking about the Mike Tyson of old is coming back. Now we'll see if he's physically capable to do that, but the mindset is there at least.
How many rounds are they supposed to
go? So they got 8 2-minute rounds.
Eight rounds.
Yep, okay. 8 2-minute rounds, and they're fighting in 14-ounce gloves, which is a lot more padding than normal, but it is a sanctioned professional bout, so this fight will go on both of their professional records.
Is Jake Paul, is he ranked right now?
No, he's not. Okay. So that's the thing. All of Jake Paul's fights have kind of been gimmick fights like this. It's more of a money grab where Jake Paul has everything to gain. Mike Tyson has everything to lose. So I'm not a big fan of it, and I have no idea. If you ask me for a prediction, I have no idea.
But there's a loser's purse. I mean, even Mike Tyson walks away with money, and I've heard that he was almost to the point of bankruptcy at some point in recent years.
So I'm sure they offered him a boatload of money, but I don't want to see a 58-year-old Mike Tyson get beat up on. That would be really depressing.
Yeah, but you know what, though? I mean, it's not like he's a good guy. I mean, maybe he is. I've heard that he's a good guy, a good-er guy now, but I mean, old boy's got some.
He's got a past.
Some baggage.
He's got a past.
Yeah, he's a biter. He's an abuser. He's been a convicted felon. He's a little bit of a problem.
Yeah.
So, there's the purse right there. Estimated payouts. Jake Paul's looking at $40 million, and Mike Tyson's looking at $20 million payout. Okay. I'll go in the ring.
Yeah, no, I think we just saw the reason he's getting in the ring right there.
I think we just saw it. All right, and there it is. Bam. 2-minute warning. All right, next, what's on your list?
Well, I saw this stat earlier, and I thought this was really interesting. So Kalen DeBoer is looking to be the first Alabama head coach to get 8 wins in his first season since 1983. And that includes Nick Saban, who didn't even get 8 wins in his first season at Alabama. And they're playing Mercer this weekend, so it would cause people to assume that he's going to get that. But I just think that's I think that's interesting of you laugh. I just think that's interesting a lot. You know, he's gotten a lot of criticism after the loss to Vanderbilt and also the loss to Tennessee of people talking about how Saban needs to come back. He's not doing a good job and, you know, freaking out about Kalen DeBoer. But you see that stat and then realize that he's probably about to achieve something that Nick Saban himself didn't even achieve. And we're seeing a shift of how Alabama's been playing as of late, and it seems to be the Alabama of old. So, you know, you see that stat the first time since 1983 that an Alabama coach has gotten 8 wins in their first season. That's an impressive stat. So maybe that stat will ease some Bama fans' tension, which I think it did after the win against LSU anyways.
But. You know what one of the key differences is Saban did not have to start off with social media. Social media, I think a lot, just like, you know, I said the word earlier, chatter. Yeah. I think some of the Kalen DeBoer chatter right now is because everybody can chatter.
Yep.
Back in the day,
chatter is louder nowadays.
Yeah, it's louder and more prolific.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, he'd also learned his lesson about wearing a T-shirt on the sidelines.
You know, maybe there's that too. if you're going to lose, then don't lose wearing a sloppy T-shirt.
All right. Is that the music?
That's the music.
And you came in right at the buzzer. So hit the buzzer, man. You got it. All right, listen, we're headed to a break. That's JP on sports. Coming back, I'm going to call an audible myself here. We're going to Stop the Madness. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international. And oh, yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to it. Welcome to hour number 3 on a Friday afternoon. We're going to get you all the way to go home time, get you guys into a great weekend. I mean, it's beautiful, beautiful weather out there right now, and I think we're looking at good weather for the entire weekend. Hey, listen, I got to make you guys aware of some things. So The Right Side Report is our new daily email blast, all right? It goes out every single day, every single weekday. The email basically tells you everything going on Right Side, because keep in mind, we're not just Right Side Radio. The company is Right Side Media. Right Side Radio is just a part of what we do. So Right Side Media has podcasts. It has video podcasts. It has written word that we get published in like 18 different periodicals around the region every week. We got all kinds of stuff. We're about to start selling some new hats and shirts. There's stuff happening. Well, the Right Side email blast called the Right Side Report goes out every day and gives you all the heads up, gives you the information about what's coming on the show, who the guests are, links to different things you might want to see. And if you want to get it, if you want to get the Right Side Report every single day, then this number you call in on text in all the time, 833-68-RIGHT, that's 833-687-4448. Just use that number and text the word, a single word, newsletter. Just text newsletter to 833-68-RIGHT, and you will get a link real quickly to help you sign up to the newsletter. We'd love to get you on the Right Side Report. I got to also tell you, too, the latest edition of the video podcast, Right Click, is, I think, uploading as we speak. Am I right to say that?
Yep, it'll be up shortly.
Yeah, it's in the process of being uploaded now. Right Click is one of our video podcasts that comes out every single week on Fridays. And Right Click, basically, if you got anybody, or you yourself for that matter, are a gamer, or somebody who's, you know, in the millennial generation, or you're into high-tech stuff, well, Birdman does Right Click podcast, and he takes high-tech and he takes gaming, and he speaks conservative through what he sees in that world. It's really fascinating. Does a great job with it. It's got a lot of followers. But yeah, go online, see it. And by the way, do me this. On YouTube, any one of our channels, we have the Right Side Media channel. We have the Right Philosophy channel. We have the Right Click channel. Go ahead and subscribe, because that really helps us as a company to grow. And it would mean a lot if you would. So I'm just asking point blank, please subscribe.
Yeah, we're at 549 YouTube subscribers right now. Let's get to 600 and then on to 1,000.
1,000 is like next level for us, man. Yep. That's good stuff. We're growing. We're growing as a company. All right, listen, I got to take some text messages, because some of y'all have been texting in, and some of them relate directly to JP on sports. So Glenn from Bluntsville, JP, he says Mike Tyson's trainer, says he is pretty much in beast mode right now.
Yeah, I mean, if you've seen any of the footage of him training, I mean, he's still Mike Tyson, you know. But it just begs the question of going up against somebody like Jake Paul, who, if you haven't been able to tell, I don't have much respect for Jake Paul, because you can tell the man is on steroids, and he's going up, beating up on old guys that have big names. So it just begs the question, will it be enough against a younger opponent like Jake Paul?
So now let me ask you this, because I don't know the answer. That's why I'm asking. Mm-hmm. Is Jake Paul, is he boxing in one of the sanctioned
like WBC,
yeah,
or
like,
AB,
yeah, exactly.
You know,
one of the conferences.
So no, a lot of his or pretty much all of his boxing matches have been like
exhibition
celebrity
rounds.
Exhibition. He just turned pro, I think, two fights ago. He fought like a lower level professional boxer who wasn't very good. He knocked him out in round one, but now he's able to say, oh, I've actually fought a boxer. Look at me, you know. But it's still not. He's not in any contention of winning any world championships.
So when's
now.
He going to join one of the federations, one of the alliances, the conferences? When's he going to join one and actually do something like
that's
that?
That's the question. The moment he does, he will get beat up. So because these are guys that have been boxing since they were kids, and he talks about how he wants to fight Canelo one day, who is literally the best boxer in the world right now. I don't think that will ever happen.
Flip from Decatur says, I am so in for the Auburn-Bama live stream. Mm. Nice.
We may have to do one here at the Right Side studio.
I'd love to do it ringside. How do we make that work? It's got to be a way. John from Huntsville says, Jake Paul is going to knock Mike Tyson out in round one with an uppercut. Mm. We'll see.
I hope not.
You know, Tyson's been beat up before. I mean, listen, you know, the famous ear battle, right? Mm-hmm. That was an epic fight, and he got his bell rung pretty hard. That's why he was clinging, yeah. and then he was biting. But I just look at it and think he's still The man is thick. I mean, he's
still Mike Tyson.
He's still Mike Tyson. So listen, don't underestimate and don't overestimate Jake Paul. Mm-hmm. In fact, I'll be honest with you. I think it would be a hoot if Tyson won.
Oh, it would. I would love it. I would love for Tyson to knock Jake Paul out. It'd be great. It'd be great for him to be humbled.
Brian from Huntsville says, if it comes down to Vols versus Army, then I shall probably have a stroke having to choose. Terry from Section, Alabama says, I need to also add that the body of Christ, the true church, must also be active in sharing the gospel to change people's hearts to make America a great country that God can bless. Spot on, Terry. Appreciate you. He also says War Eagle Class 79. Adam from Athens says, hey, JP, go Vols.
Roll Tide.
Mike from Florence says, JP, I got 7 out of 8 picks right for the win in the NFL. 7 of 8 doesn't pay over $100. I lost $5. The worst part? The 8th was the last game. Womp, womp, womp.
You know, that's similar to me. I got 9 out of the 10 picks right for my show, and the last one was Oklahoma blowing up a 2-touchdown lead within the last 2 minutes. So I feel you.
Going back into politics, Thomas from Athens texted in regarding that Senator Katie Britt interview and says that list, and he means the list that were saying who really voted for Rick Scott and who didn't, that list was probably a dim trolling. It could have been, you know what? And what's interesting is, unfortunately, it could have been a Republican trolling.
Yeah.
Or it could have been somebody clickbaiting on their social media that came up with a list while they were sitting, you know, in mommy's basement typing up some keyboard courage. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know where it came from. All I know is we've heard from Katie Britt. Brian from Bluntsville says, if Thune doesn't cooperate, and he sends a meme that says, Glenn Buck says, Senate insider explains how J.D. Vance could still effectively serve as a Senate Majority Leader. Not going to happen, though. It's interesting. There's a way. Said a little known procedure in the Senate gives the Majority Leader the right to be recognized on the floor first. Who decides to recognize him? The person sitting in the chair, and that chair belongs to J.D. Vance. Anybody sitting in that chair is borrowing his seat. He can walk in the room, kick him out, take the seat, recognize whoever he wants who's going to move President Trump's nominees. He could. Now, you're right. I do say that. I thought he was saying replace him as Majority Leader. By de facto or by default, he could take the chair and decline to recognize someone. Now, that's going to be like a nuclear option. If they do something like that, it's because good order and discipline has broken down and the team is no longer a team. If it gets to the point that the executive branch is having to come over and muscle its way through the processes of the legislative branch to do that, then we have reached an impasse of dangerous levels. And we don't need that. I'm praying that that is not where we go. And then regarding General Mike Flynn, who I think would be a great pick for the FBI, Kyle from Madison says, Ambassador to UK for General Flynn, the Intel connection. Interesting. Very interesting. Scott from Somerville got on the newsletter. Thank you, Scott. And Jeff from Indiana says, the thing you have to remember about Mike Tyson is he has a bell, but the ringer's gone.
Yeah.
What? What did you just say? John M. from Huntsville says, regarding Mike Tyson, he says, remember two things, experience and old strength.
You know, old man strength is a real thing.
Old man strength's a real thing, said the old man sitting across from you in the studio. Yeah, I saw. In fact, I need to get one. My buddy Bobby, I got him a T-shirt that said Old Man Fight Club on it. Had a picture of a grizzly old dude. But I saw a meme, and it had an old school, like, special operator with a gray beard and just looking rangy and tough. And it said, fear the old man who lives in a young man's world.
That's funny.
Jim from Grove Oaks says, Senator Britt's a fast talker, but I believe her. I had to break in a couple times. She is a fast talker. Robbie from Montana says, hitting Tyson is probably still like hitting a brick wall. Tyson will redeem us older men and smack the punk around like he's never been hit. I'm starting to rethink whether I want to do pay-per-view tonight. Is it on pay-per-view or what?
So Netflix is actually doing
Netflix
a pay-per-view.
Netflix is doing it.
Yeah, Netflix is doing a pay-per-view. Actually, I think if you have a Netflix account, you automatically get it. I'm not sure, but yeah, that's where it will be.
Yeah, by the way, when did that change where you pay for the streaming service and then you pay for what's on the streaming service separately?
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Stop it. All right, take me to a break. I'm going to come back from this break. We will jump into Stop the Madness. I'm pulling an audible. I'm kicking off Dipper number 2, moving right to Dipper number 3. I got some audio clips from Justine Bateman, Pete Hegseth, and then commentary from just little old me, Phil Williams, saying, "Stop the madness." We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, wow, like pulling pins on truth grenades. That's what we're doing around here today. All right, so it's been a full day. I mean, between the interview with Senator Britt, JP on sports, taking care of the first Dipper, which was all about the U.S. Senate. Now I'm going to just go ahead and jump right onto what was categorized as Dipper number three for the day. I'm calling it Stop the Madness. Stop the Madness. So what am I talking about? Well, you can already imagine, some of y'all, it's just literally, the woke culture has gotten so out of hand, like, and so beyond the pale, that you look at it and think, okay, Democrats, do you not even hear yourself anymore? You say stuff and you pursue stuff and you're looking at, the challenges of life that we face as a transgender man that wants to breastfeed. And you're like, what? Stop. Just stop. It doesn't work that way. And you know what? I will say this. I've said it on the show multiple times that I really believe the left was so empowered, if you will, over the last 4 years. Not empowered like in a good way, but like cut loose to do whatever they wanted to do. Like somebody took the leash off. That's what I'm talking about. They were empowered and enabled and given the opportunity, free reign, if you will, to do whatever they wanted to do for the last 4 years. Anything goes. Make it happen. I mean, you want to believe that men can be women? Sure. You want to do surgeries on minors and life-altering surgeries to pretend that they can be gender fluid? Sure, why not? You want to listen, on and on and on. And the wokeness, y'all, has got to stop. Well, here's the thing. I really believe you can feel it. I said on the show last week, you can feel the difference in the air. You can. There's a different sense of excitement. There's a sense that things are changing. There's a sense that right now we have the hope of like a restoration of sanity, if you will. Well, then yesterday as I'm getting, this morning early, as I'm getting ready for the show, I mean, this is somewhere around probably 5:15 this morning. I'm going through some stuff for the show, and I find an audio clip from Justine Bateman. Now, some of y'all may remember Justine Bateman. She and Michael J. Fox got their start as child actors on the show, Family Ties, back in the, was that the 80s, 90s? But 80s, I guess. But the reality is Justine Bateman, who is now, I think, 58 years old, is still in Hollywood. She's a director, an actor, a producer. Lo and behold, she's a conservative. And she has been coming out hard. And man, listen, if you don't follow her on social media, you ought to, because it's a hoot. I started following her on X now, Twitter. And her thing is, she takes, almost like libs of TikTok, she takes videos that libs make of themselves, and then she critiques them as if she is the producer for or director and goes into all the things they're doing wrong when they make their video. It's hilarious. But I saw an interview she did with Jesse Waters on Fox. And you got audio clip number two. I'm going to go with audio clip number two first. This is Justine Bateman. I want to listen to part of it, and then I'll probably break in and comment. Go ahead and play it.
What I'm really excited about is that the political correctness, the sort of woke era is over, because you need mob mentality momentum in order to keep that going, in order to threaten people if they're not thinking and talking the way you do, to threaten their lives, threaten their careers, threaten their place in society. You need that momentum in order to do that. And when Trump won presidency again, that cut that momentum off. So this whole woke era is over.
You're right. I mean, they only are effective when they work in perfect harmony together. And now they're all divided and arguing with each other, and they're not on offense. They're canceling each other. And that's probably a good thing. Is it really official? You believe it's official? We're never going back to cancel culture. We're never going back to political correctness. You're calling it right here?
Well, I'm saying you need that. I mean, when you look at mob mentality and the things that have happened, like the tulip mania hundreds of years ago, the burning of the witches in Salem, there needed to be a mob mentality momentum. And if you don't have that, it dies out. And I'm talking about, yes, things have changed politically, obviously, but it's spiritual. It's a spiritual shift. It started a little bit when Elon Musk bought Twitter and turned it into X. And it really changed when Donald Trump won this presidency. I can feel it, definitely.
Right, I can feel
it. Stop it there. I think she's right. I think you can feel it. I think there was a shifting in the momentum. And I love what she said about the herd mentality, the craziness that happens, like the Salem witch trial she's talking about, where they would do the most ridiculous things, like throw you in the water, and if you drowned, that meant that you were innocent, because only a witch could swim or float. Like, what? I mean, that kind of crap requires a herd mentality of either A, the people who are trying to lead the herd and come up with the initiatives that are very important, and B, the herd that just goes, okay, because we're sheeple and all we do is follow you. You have to have that. And that's what we've seen, by the way, in the transgender agenda. That's exactly what we've seen. It's been a herd mentality. We have to get on board. We have to do it. We have to get on board with that. Children can be gender fluid. Five-year-olds can make a decision about whether they're boys or girls. We understand. We agree. No, you can only do that if you're A, either a follower, or B, trying to incite a new agenda. Either way, it's a herd mentality. And what she just said was the herd mentality is coming to an end because the empowerment of the herd is ending. And I find this to be, like, just deeply insightful. But when we get back, I want to dive into this a little bit more. When we get back, I want to give you some of the things. When I say stop the madness, I'm going to give you some examples of things that are, some people are finally stepping up saying stop. But then look at what they're trying to say stop to. You wonder, how did it ever get started? I mean, for the love of God, how did we get to that point? And I say we. You and I weren't doing it. JP and I certainly weren't on board with this. This audience wasn't on board with it. But there's a whole lot of people that were just sheeple, not people, if you know what I'm saying. Well, I'm for being a sheepdog and putting a stop to the madness. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We're going to end this show on a high note. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man. I forgot what I was going to say. I was about to say covering down, and I started to say something else, and I looked over at Twitter, and I got distracted by an alligator. I don't know what to say about that. Oh, yeah, we are covering down on some major ground across the northern half of Alabama. Anyway, all said and done, let me jump right into the content, because I do want to get back to this thing about stop the wokeness. So stop the madness, stop the wokeness. One of the places that I'm really, and I'm going to call for audio number one here momentarily, one of the places where I really want to see us stop the wokeness is in the U.S. military. I know some of y'all are listening out there right now, and you could so identify. I mean, I know for a fact in this audience, there's green suiters that are still active duty that are out there at Redstone Arsenal listening to what we have to say. I mean, right here in our listening area, we've got Maxwell Air Force Base, Anderson Army Depot, Redstone Arsenal, and we've got any number of National Guard training centers and installations. So I know some of y'all are listening. And at the same time, we've got veterans and we've got family members of people who are on active duty right now. And we want it changed. We want the culture of the military back to being about war fighting and honor and integrity and less about being a petri dish for the experimentation of the social left. So that being said, you got to look at this whole thing about Pete Hegseth being the nominee for Secretary of Defense. My first thought when I saw that was like, Pete Hegseth? Now, I get it. You look at it and go, and I'm still wanting to hear more about his ability to lead large-scale organizations. But if you have any concerns at all about where he is on some of what I would call the cultural issues, where he is on his education, he's got an undergraduate from Princeton, a master's from Yale, Harvard. He served in the military. He did two combat tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. Got out as a major. He led Concerned Veterans for America as their national executive director. He was considered at one point by the Trump administration in the last go round for an appointment as the director of the VA, but for whatever reason he didn't. I'm looking at him and go, he's a far more serious candidate when I began to realize who all he is and where he's been. But you can also look at what he said. He's very much on the record. He did a Sean Ryan podcast. I'm not sure when this was done, but you good on Clipper One, Dipper, excuse me, audio number one? This is Pete Hegseth talking about wokeness in the military. We need to stop this madness. Play it.
If you had a Cat 4 dental, they pulled your tooth.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't be out in the field with a major, you know, dental emergency where there's no dentist. Mm-hmm. And so I deployed with a lot of guys who were like, because they just had a tooth pulled and they had to.
I've seen that.
Yet we're now allowing people who used to be men or women join. And then after that, we pay for medical or physical transitions to another gender, which by definition makes them non-deployable and non-trainable for years, because they're, and the same thing with asthma medication or inhalers. Like when you're in basic training, you can't have an inhaler when you're doing your exercises because you can't count on having an inhaler in a combat situation.
Yeah.
Well, if you're medically dependent on drugs to maintain your gender or a particular balance of chemicals inside your body, you're by definition non-deployable. And so you'd have, they'd have soldiers who can't train, can't deploy, have been on the books, and yet everyone has to be careful about what pronoun you use with them.
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with how effective a unit's gonna be. And yet so something like that should be banned on day one in a Trump administration. We're not doing the treaty, and he did that. It got immediately reversed under Biden. Things like that, because it's a top-down, I'm not saying top-down is the only way that works. I know that. I know that you top-down things, and people can ignore it, and they can maneuver it, and they can work around it. I just think there's enough of a core inside the DOD that if you push top-down and then you change the way you do basic training and the way you do recruiting and the way you do the military academies, you have a fighting chance to restore an ethos. Now, that doesn't say anything about how the politicians will use that military in the future, which they have a horrible track record of, but institutionally, you at least have a chance. Maybe.
Great clip. And it's amazing to hear someone be that clear-headed about wokeness in the military, like unabashedly, at the same time be considered for the top position for the military. Have you seen that in the last 4 years? No. I mean, we're dealing with a society of cultural leftism, the wokists, who have been trying to deny that we can even define what a woman is. Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson would not even define what a woman is during her confirmation hearings. Mark Milley, biggest disappointment. I mean, all the scare me badges in the world on his uniform, and he could not abide by the idea that perhaps wokeness was hurting our military. I look at the things that happened, and I'm thinking, my gosh, could we stop using CRT at the military academies? Could we stop promoting DEI initiatives for those in uniform, and get back to the idea of meritocracy? So I got a piece right here for the Daily Signal. It says the cultural curators are facing a reckoning from mocking middle America, and that's what I believe is really happening right now. Because, you know, the populist coalition that got out there and voted for Trump and said we're tired of all this, it was really saying, please stop the madness. We want our economy back. We want our border back. And oh, by the way, can we have our culture back? Can we please stop going into any number of just agenda-based, non-truthful wokeisms that do nothing but hurt our society and diminish our capacities? And the voters, this article points out from the Daily Signal, Dateline 2 days ago, the voters, they point out, were directly observable. It wasn't hard. It was all walks of life. It was blue collar, white collar, and no collar. It was everybody. It was all the folks out there who were voting of every strata of society were saying these things, and they were being ignored by the left and being ignored by the mainstream media. And we got so worn out with all the doomsaying and the inaccurate reporting and the idea that voting for Trump was going to be the downfall of Western civilization. And then, you know, Trump's really losing. Everybody's leaving his rallies. It's really not that important anymore to people to even see Trump. I got news. That didn't happen. And so here's the thing. Stopping the madness. Here's one for you. How about we stop some things like, oh, I don't know, how about this one? Daily Caller. How's this for a headline? This is going to break the bank. You ready? Some of y'all are going to swerve on the road. Be careful driving. You ready? Brace yourselves. We've got an article right here from Daily, this is actually Daily Wire, not Daily Caller, Daily Wire. The founder of the breastfeeding support group quits over the idea of pandering to trans-identifying men. Why is that a headline? Why is that a headline anywhere in the world? Why is that even newsworthy? Why did any organization dedicated to the idea of helping women with support in breastfeeding start talking about men breastfeeding? Here's an idea. Men don't breastfeed. Can we say it out loud? Yes, men don't breastfeed. So Marian Thompson is 94 years old. She's the founder of a international organization called LaLesh. LaLesh is there. It's a breastfeeding, you know, support group. It encourages women and helps them through processes and provides answers and all that kind of stuff. She just had to resign from the organization she helped start decades ago because the organization, in her words, has subtly shifted to include men for whatever reason, she said, that want to have the experience of breastfeeding despite no careful long-term research on male lactation. Let me just point out, there's nothing to research. Males don't lactate. They just don't. And the fact that we have this headline at all, can we please stop the madness? Well, I don't know what Marian Thompson's going to accomplish, but I'm so proud she stood up. She's 94 years old. She could be sitting at home right now just enjoying her retirement, but she chose to buck the system. She chose to go ahead and buck the people that are out there running the organization that she founded and loves. I look at different things like we were told over and over again that the existential threat to our day is climate change. Really? Because I don't think China thinks that. Well, no. And don't you understand? The biggest thing important to voters is abortion. Really? I don't think that really resonated to the vast majority of voters. Speaking of which, this one is from Daily Caller. Have you heard about the 4B movement? I've been wondering, what does 4B even stand for? Well, I still don't know after I read the article. It says the radical spirit of American feminists is being embraced in South Korea's 4B movement. So it came from South Korea. The term 4B, it stands for the four no's that fed-up Korean women refuse to participate in. No sex, no giving birth, no dating men, and no marriage with men. The guy says it's basically political lesbianism. I made you laugh.
That's good. That's true.
It's political true. Lesbianism. But I look at it and go, okay, it's 4B, but it stands for four no's. So where's the B? Is this, I don't understand.
I have no idea. And truth be told, I have to question if the girls who are participating in this would even have had to have started this movement if men wanted to get with them in the first place.
Just saying, if they, yeah. So by the way, they did point out here, they say, Little Miss Abortion is going to be lasting about all of 2 weeks in her 4B movement as she quickly brings home that irresistible guitar player with the neck tattoo. Political. Can we stop the madness? Here's one. I'm going to run out of time, so I'm just going to throw a couple things in here. How about this one? OutKick has an article, Dateline, yesterday. Volleyball players are now suing the Mountain West Conference. Suing them because they've been allowing transgenders to play against women in college volleyball. It's the San Jose State thing. We've talked about it several times, but Mountain West Conference is now dealing with an actual lawsuit as female athletes are stepping up and saying, stop the madness. And you know what? I really believe that they've got the ability now to get that done. I think 3 years ago, these girls would have either been cowed into silence or not given any credence to say anything. But I believe that we're seeing a different level right now of people that have said, stop the madness, and oh, by the way, I'll help you stop it. A clear indication that some things are changing too. University of Michigan, student government, Wolverine folks, just impeached their student government president. How does that? I didn't know that could happen. I didn't
know that either.
I didn't either. University of Michigan's experiment in woke governance has come to an end. a majority of the student government, Dateline 2 days ago on hotair.com. A majority of the student government voted to impeach the body's current president and vice president, both of whom were elected earlier this year as part of a slate of pro-Palestinian candidates. The Ann Arbor-based school's central student government voted 30-7. That's overwhelming. 30-7 to oust the president and vice president, who are part of a pro-Palestine activist group called Shut It Down, for neglecting their responsibilities and actively trying to block funding for student groups on campus. That is awesome. So it's not just in, like, grown-up land. I mean, this is like college students saying, would you please stop the madness? You're embarrassing the rest of us. This makes no sense. All right, now I got to go to a break. Stop the madness. There, I got it in. That was some good stuff. Men lactating. Oh, God. Please. Oh, Lee from Huntsville's correcting me, by the way. She says, Phil, it's La Che League. It's La Che. Thanks, Lee.
La leche, which means milk. That's what she says.
La leche. Okay, la leche. Whatever. We're taking a break. Men don't lactate. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. A bunch of y'all are texting in. A bunch of y'all have been watching online. We appreciate you more than you could possibly know. So thank you for that. The grades are in. I'll tell those real quick before I go to the phones. JP and Phil are today's co-winners with a nearly perfect A double plus. Congratulations. Also want you to know, JP, that he'll probably see a text from me tomorrow morning about 9 a.m. complaining about college football and the 12-team playoff system. All right.
Look forward to it.
All right. Get on it. That's right. JP, he's on first thing in the morning on the Off the Bench radio show.
On the Up.
9 to 11 on the Up.
Mm-hmm. 103.9 FM if y'all are in Huntsville.
There you go. Jenny from Lacey Springs just texted in. La Leche, is that her doing it? Okay. Why'd they give it such a hard name? She said, I was a La Leche League leader, that's hard to say, for a decade. It was founded on scientifically verified breastfeeding information for women, yada, yada. She gives me some stuff about lactation being a function of pregnancy. I get that. And then she said, the idea of biological male and induced hormone supplementation, she said, it's the same as it's showing the same as breast milk. She said, I'm out. So I know I mangled that text, but I was kind of in a hurry. But thank you, Jenny. Appreciate you. And then Mike from Florence said, you just made me realize that I'm lactate intolerant. Let me go to the phones. Jeff Rowe from Indiana is on there. What you doing, Jeff Rowe? How are you, man?
I'm almost through the mess. It's getting better.
Oh, so you talk in Nashville when you say the mess.
Yeah, well, that's the only place I know that's that messy.
What do you think about this show today? Did you hear anything that piqued your interest?
Yeah, you know, you're talking about this wokeism stuff and everything. You know, in my opinion, where it all stems from is participation trophies. Because that is about the beginning of this madness. You know, we taught our kids that they can go out there and you don't really have to do anything, but you're going to get, you know, the other team can score 20 points and then you can score nothing, but you're going to get a ribbon. You're going to get a participation trophy, and it's going to make you feel good, you know, and then you really don't have to go out there and try to do anything or anything because you're automatically going to get what you want.
You know, a participation trophy thing is like the downfall of Western society. Now, I don't mind if a kid gets a trophy for being on the team as long as they understand you win and you lose. There's actual winners and there's actual losers. And life's hard, wear a helmet. I get that.
Yeah, it's like I say, you know, these kids and they've grown up and everything and they've never been told no.
Yeah.
And they grown up and not knowing how the real world works. And then somebody tells them no, and then they, good Democrats, they look up and scream at the sky because they just lost an election, you know. Where you don't see any Republicans doing that. I mean, we might get a little angry and disappointed and everything, but I've never seen anybody scream at the sky whenever Biden got elected, except for, you know, maybe a few curse words, maybe another time.
Yeah, nobody shaved their head and declared themselves abstinent for the next 4 years. I mean, it's like the left is just in freak mode right now.
Yeah, well, it's like, you know, being abstinent, I don't think they had a choice of this. A lot of them.
All right, man. I'm hitting the end right here. We're about to have the music playing, but you be safe on the road. I appreciate you.
Have a good weekend, Phil.
We'll see you, man. Jeff cracks me up. By the way, Victor from Huntsville wants me to know that the 4B movement comes from the Korean word by, which means no. Okay. Fine. And then Steve from Harville says the 4B movement also comes from a Korean words, Bahan, marriage, Bachosan, anyway, I get it. Okay. It's Korean. You know what? It's also foolish.
Yep.
It's just ridiculous. It's nuts. Can we please stop the madness? Can we just go ahead and say that we're done with all that? I think we're done.
I think we voted that we're done.
I think the vast majority earned the right to say, you go shave your head, we're done with you. Just saying. All right, you guys, listen, the reason why we do what we do is because of y'all. This has been a great week. It's been a great 2 weeks. It's been a turning point, and I really do believe it's been a turning point. And I look forward to what's going to happen next week. But listen, all the way through it, it's because of y'all that we do what we do. Thank you for being the audience to this show. Thank you for being the supporters of Right Side Media as a company overall. And remember, there are more of us than there are of them. God is still on his throne. Y'all stay in the fight. We'll see you Monday.